Christ's glory, His divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Sai Ram and respectful greetings to all our listeners from Team Radio Sai. Good morning, dear sisters and brothers, and thank you for joining us on Thursday Live, coming to you from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and I will be your host for this segment called Morning Glory. And yes, with the grace of our Lord, I hope to bring you an inspiring lineup of programs this morning. Today is a very special day, the 28th of December 2017, which means today is the very last segment of Thursday Live for the year 2017, and what a year it has been. It's a bit nippy in the ashram today. It was a really actually more than a nippy morning because our overnight temperatures these days tend to dip to as low as 13 degrees Celsius. That's like Siachen Glacier inside Puttaparthi because we're not used to such weather. Current temperature outside the Radio Sai studios right now is a heavenly 21 degrees Celsius with clear blue skies, plenty of winter sunshine, which is so welcoming, and a gentle breeze. The time in our studio right now is 9:39 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and the ever-uplifting Vedam and Bhajans have just concluded in the Sai Kulwant Hall. Right now, the Sai Gayatri is still going on, and devotees are proceeding to the Holy Mahasannidhi of Bhagwan for their divine darshan. What a week we had here in the abode of supreme peace. It feels as though the heavens had descended here to spread joy and love among the devotees. And do we have the world melting into this pot or what? Right now, the ashram is hosting the Great India Diversity Pageant of Loving Service in Action. Sai devotees from northeast and northern states of India are basking in the pleasant weather here in Parthi, because they have come from very chilly cold weather in their respective regions. And add to that mix a globally diverse population from every single continent and over 100 countries. It is a fragrant potpourri of the human family. And true to Bhagwan's teachings of universal love and oneness, Christmas 2017 was celebrated on a grand and heavenly scale with choirs and dramas and incredibly beautiful Christmas decorations by the Australians and some very inspiring and moving presentations and speeches. Incidentally, the South African devotees remain the backbone of all Christmas efforts every single year. They really are so committed to this festival, and no matter which country is taking the lead, they all can fall back upon South Africa because they made it their business to come and serve selflessly, and we love them for that. Everything about our Prashanti Nilayam is really divine. The festivities, the weather, the smiling faces of the entire human race peacefully sharing their space and devotion. And behind such harmony in diversity is the underlying love of the one being, just one single entity, the Supreme Godhead and personal God to millions, our beloved Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. What power! Just think about it. At Radio Sai, we bow to His glory and to His splendor over and over again. Now for today's episode of Morning Glory, I have for you part two of the engaging and so well articulated Triswa Divinity interview with Mrs. Geeta Umesh and Mr. Umesh Rao of Bangalore. This interview takes us down their memory lane as they share insider stories of the close physical proximity and access that their family enjoyed over generations. So much nostalgia has been captured there, and the old world charm, it all comes together in this conversation. One very special and important mention here, dear listeners, is that I urge you to trust your host on this one. So please stay with this conversation for its entirety. Why do I say so? Because the last 22 seconds will convince you why every single devotee must stay tuned to Morning Glory next Thursday. It's a must. Must. You will want to inform your friends and family of the same as well. So listen to the entire interview, enjoy every moment of it, and remember, the key to the next episode lies in the last 25 seconds of this file. Over now to Trisvi Divinity Part 2. My guests, as I said, are Mrs. Geeta Umesh and Mr. Umesh Rao. Till we meet next year, in about 7 days from now, right here on Morning Glory, I lovingly remind you, dear sisters and brothers, the first episode of Morning Glory 2018 is a must listen for every single Sai devotee. Please enjoy the show, and I did not make a particular mention of the traffic in downtown Puttaparthi, actually. I must remember, it was very clear and smooth. That was primarily because I came so early to the ashram in that period after the Nagar Sankirtan is over and before the children leave to attend their schools and the parents are rushing around to drop them. So if you're in that cusp zone at about 8:15, 8:20, traffic is clear. After that, everybody gets busy rushing to the institutes of higher learning, Ishwaramba school, which is a day school. So a lot of children are being dropped off and people coming to the ashram to report to work. So if you can beat that rush hour traffic in downtown Puttaparthi, you get to work very quickly, which is what I did today. So traffic was smooth when I came. The weather is nippy, but so pleasant. If there's any place on the face of the planet you ought to be, it is here. And when? Right now. So book your ticket, come home, celebrate the new year with the Lord at home at his lotus feet. With that thought, I urge you to enjoy the show and stay with me for the entire duration. And I will be waiting for your feedback. The email ID for sharing your thoughts, comments and feedback remains listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and enjoy the show. Jai Sai Ram. Now, speaking of Swami coming to your house so many times, just walking in, dropping by unannounced and, you know, standing behind the ladies cooking and the kind of informal familiarity that you had. During those moments, were you awake or aware of the fact that you were dealing with the divine incarnation, or were there moments where the maya enveloped and you kind of forgot who he was?
No, I think at no point did we ever forget that it was divinity walking in. No.
It was always in awe.
Always.
Even later, if you say after the 21st century and at that post-1995 period on to 2010-11, I always had an opportunity to sit in the veranda or interact with Swami on so many occasions with our counseling work and so on. I could never bring about that kind of casual familiarity with Swami or talk to Swami, but that feeling that this is God, you can never forget that.
See, we never took Swami for granted, but we always had the intimacy. I think that's a very special kind of a connection.
It's something like if you had in school a teacher or somebody whom you revered as a teacher and a guru and you respected them, but yet they treated you with love and with feeling. I mean, I've experienced it with so many professors and so on, both here and in the US. A very much larger image of, you know, the kind of respect that you have, the kind of awe. And here was divinity. That's why, like I said, when he was holding my hand and asking me to take him across the
road,
I mean, to me it was a mind-blowing experience.
So after getting you married, as you went through family life and you had children too, I'm assuming?
Actually, I have a son and a daughter. And both children were born with Swami's blessings. And I wasn't even aware I had conceived. His omniscience is known because he just came walking when Vijay Sai was with me and my mother-in-law and me. We were sitting in Vrindavan. And Swami comes walking and he looks at my mother-in-law and he says, "Why are you sitting still? your grandson is on his way. And he chanted a beautiful shloka and gave me a champak flower. And I said, take namaskar. And
he said grandson.
He said grandson. So it is after that that we went to the doctor, and it was, you know, too early to even, but that's when we realized that yes, I had started on my first child. And Swami said he would perform the Namakarna. He came home to perform the Namakarna. He gave me a choice of two names.
That was nice. What were they?
Gunaranjan. Okay. And the moment Swami said Gunaranjan, I said, it sounds a little strange. And then he said Vidyadhar, and I just kept quiet because, I mean, we left it all to Swami. And then he said, yes, let it be Vidyadhar, because you have Sundar, you have Giridhar, you have Narendar, and this is Vidyadhar, all ending in dhars, rhyming. And actually that day a real miracle happened, because the child was very, very uncomfortable throughout the day. He hadn't slept, and just before Swami entered our home is when he fell fast asleep. And Swami asked me to come hold the baby and sit in front of him. And all that he did was, he said, Chudra, he said, just look at me. And immediately the baby opened his eyes and saw Swami. And Swami was so thrilled. He said, see, I just had to say Chudra, and he opened his eyes. I mean, the child was fast asleep. Just then, you know, he was so deep in sleep. And just the soft voice of Swami saying Chudra, and immediately opened. And he,
do you all speak Telugu?
We learned Telugu because we came to Swami's fold. But otherwise, our mother tongue is Marathi.
I see.
And he materialized a locket for my child. And it said, wife here when I'm here. It had Shirdi Baba on it. And when my child was around 3 years old, he actually fell off a staircase. And he reached the bottom of the steps, not a scratch on his body, but this pendant was totally smashed.
Wow. Dented and dented. Because it was 10 hard steps, and the child rolled down the 10 steps and fell.
Sometimes when he gives these things like
more
a safety,
like a rakshak,
and after that it just disappeared, and we don't even know where it went. The same way he named my daughter, and he kind of said it's going to be a daughter this time, and he named her Ahladini. And he also explained the meaning of her name so beautifully. He said it's another name for Radha when she's lost in bliss. That state of bliss is called Ahlada. And for the life of us, we were listening to it for the first time. We'd never heard that name before. And the way Swami pronounced it, it sounds so beautiful and so special. And my father-in-law was wanting to name the child Radha because that was his mother's name. But here was Swami coming up with this very unique name, which also meant Radha. So my father-in-law was also very happy. And he named her in Vrindavan. He wanted the baby to be brought there, and the entire family was there. And
that was
he named Vidyulata, my niece, Viju's sister. And he explained the meaning of Vidyulata. He said, it's actually lightning, a creeper which goes on a lightning. And he said, can you guess what it means? None of us could guess. He said, that's the life force. It flashes up and down like lightning on the spine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the name of Vidyulata. That's what it means.
So we should check Vidyu's Kundalini now. Next time we see her.
But with my daughter also, you know, in our traditional, we have the ear piercing ceremony. And I think prior to that, for your sister, he had done
my sister's ears.
We were waiting for Swami to do that for my daughter. And, you know, we told him, yes, Swami would do it in his good time. You never know when he's going to do it. So one day I was carrying her, and she was, I think, what, about 2.5, is it, or something like that, or 3 years old. In Vrindavan, in the portic, I was standing, old Vrindavan, and students were there, and Swami just came out with my father behind him, and Professor Gokak and Narendra, and so on. So then he looks at me, and he says, ah, you brought your daughter. She was, you know, just smiling and looking at Swami, and then he said, you want to have your ears born? You want a pair of earrings? Because the child is just smiling, and I'm saying, Swami, yes, Swami, we want you to do it. Then he looks at her, and then suddenly he materializes those two gold. And you know how they are.
Straight wires.
Straight wires.
He pierces with them and twirls them into rings.
Yes, and then twirls them into rings.
He's never done it for me. Sorry, I hope you're listening. But it's such a joy to hear how he did it for so many people.
Yes. So here I'm holding the child.
Oh,
and
so
I'm a very, very strict engineer in my blood. And I say that, you know, when that pointed thing is going to touch this delicate skin.
I know.
There is going to be a reaction. Maybe she'll cry, maybe she won't. But there is going to be an instinctive or an involuntary, you know,
reaction.
She's going to jerk in my hand, so I'm holding her. And Swami is just talking to her and says, see, lovely earrings I'm going to make for you. And he's just touching her ear, and before you know, he's got it wrapped around, and that child didn't even wince. And I honestly didn't feel a thing about the child having experienced that. See, isn't that so nice? You want another one? And he does the other thing. See, did that hurt you? But the child doesn't say anything, smiling.
And he's taken complete care of everything. And, you know, when she finished her bachelor's and her BEd, he wanted her to do her master's in the U.S. for special needs children. And he blessed her, saying, just apply. And she got full scholarship to go and study at Smith. And he also selected the boy, son-in-law.
He said, idare idare bartare.
He told me during one of the interviews, and I didn't know who was going to come as our son-in-law. And Pankaj is the name of our son-in-law. I'd known him when he was studying in school. And after that, we lost touch. But then suddenly, the proposal came from Pankaj's mother and Pankaj's side. And when we brought it to Swami, he said, yes, he's the right boy. Call the mother and I will talk to her. And he materialized a very beautiful cuckoo clock, I mean a small little one like a pendant for my daughter. And he said, keep track of time, time is very precious. And he gave her that, and he materialized the Mangal Sutra in the interview room. They were coming here for the first time. I mean, they knew that we were very ardent devotees. So the moment Pankaj's mother saw Swami for the first time, she says, I truly believed. His feet just didn't touch the floor. It looked as though he was just sailing towards me. And so she was really very much in awe. And the family, you know, very strongly believe in Swami being, you know, the guide even to this day in our lives. And they respect.
And you have a grandchild studying here?
I have, yeah. We have four grandchildren, two of my sons, Veda and Medha. Veda studying in Swami's school. She joined the 11th now.
In Prashanthi Nilayam.
In Prashanthi Nilayam. And my son-in-law and daughter live in the U.S. So their son Akhand and Anushka, they study in the U.S. So Medha is still studying in Vidya Niketan, where Veda graduated from her 10th there. So she continues school there. Actually, it was her choice, Veda's choice, to come and join Swami's school. And she's enjoying the atmosphere, the ambience, the bhajans, the Vedams.
And that in itself is a kind of miracle in one sense, because we didn't have the faintest idea that she would
join
Swami's school over here, and we thought she would want to continue in Vidyaniketan. But all of a sudden, because her dad, my son, had studied here, might have got into her mind, or I feel that is probably Swami wanted her to come. Suddenly she switched and she said, no, I want to go and study in Parthi.
Yeah, which is a great blessing for a child to be prompted.
Yes.
And this is not a decision you can force on a teenager in this age and day. No. So unless it comes from within.
Absolutely. Yes.
And the same thing had happened even to my son Vidya, that he voluntarily, you know, he said, no, I won't want to study in Parthi.
He was studying in the European High School in Bangalore. Swami gave us an interview, and in that interview he kind of disciplined us. He said, you're very, very attached to your children, and you've got to learn how to detach. And then out of nowhere, this just spontaneously came to me. I said, Swami, I want to put my son here in your school. And he said, yeah, let it be your decision. And he made us wait for 10 whole days.
And that was very funny. This was on the 60th birthday time, you know. And Vidya that was joining in between classes, like he joined 8th standard, I think.
And Habu sir was the principal.
And he said, no vacancy.
I don't know how Swami can say that you can put your child here.
He used to do that to many of us. We know that drill.
So we would wait here during darshan. Yeah. Swami would just look at me and, you know, give a very reassuring smile, saying, don't worry, I'll take care. And then again, we would have to go and meet Habu sir. And he would say, no, I haven't heard anything from Swami.
Then you know how it got resolved. Huh? Very funny. Then suddenly one day, after sitting for about, she said, 8 or 10 days, every day we would sit in that. Those days it was the old building, you know. With the sand, this thing in front. Then suddenly Habu came to me and he said, Umeshrao, please bring your son for an entrance exam. We're giving an exam for two or three boys.
Three boys.
We're going to take three boys. I said, fine. We didn't even ask him why. So then we went and took him, and then I asked Habu, what happened, sir? How did suddenly the vacancy? You said there were no vacancy and this happened. He said, you know, it's just like Swami. I went to Swami and Swami asked me casually, how many students in your class? I said, Swami, 55 is the limit, but I've already got 57. Ah, you've got two more than 55 already. So you're already full. But this year is my 60th birthday, no?
clever.
So, if you've gone to 57, why don't you make it 60?
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah.
And so three boys joined that year. One was Vidyadhar, one was Dhruv Subbaiya, and the other was Mahesh Natesan. So he took these three boys.
Where will you get such a...
In the 8th grade.
And so diplomatically and cleverly, so that the principal feels he's still within the rules.
Yes.
So nice. So tactful song.
Very tactful.
And he really is a master in that. You know, about my daughter also. She narrated the incident, but the little relationship. She finished her B.Ed. And then she wanted to do a master's in special education. We're told
B.Ed was from Bangalore University.
But M.A. she wanted to do it in special education at a university in Smith College. And that had a double degree there, one at Graham Bell Institute for the Hearing Impaired. So it's a tough school to get in. But anyway, I showed Swami the prospect. She said, no, let her apply. It's a good, this thing, it'll be good. So she applied. Then she got in. Then typical East Coast, you know, and these are all those Ivy League schools. The bomb came. It's about $55,000 or something. I said, where am I going to go for $55,000? So then I looked up and they said, you can get a scholarship, free ship, everything. Plus, if you work for about 8 hours a week, you'll also get free boarding and lodging. Mm. So I told Swami, this is the thing, I'll have to apply for it. So we applied for that and we just sat back. And suddenly I'm sitting in my office in Jai Mahal one day. And I just get an envelope, you know, special courier delivery from this university. I open it and I see Aladini, she's been awarded a full free ship. And in addition, if you're prepared to work for 8 hours a week, you're boarding and lodging. So all we had to do was pay for the ticket.
Wow.
So I went to Swami and told him, Swami, this. I told you, no, she'll get it. You keep worrying about you, send her. Then I was very, very happy. So then Swami, it doesn't stop with that. I think that was happened in the morning. Evening, Darshini comes and says, Mishra, she's going, no, to U.S. And, you know, a young single girl going there. I think we should get her engaged before she goes.
She should get a double M.A., he said.
Get a double M.A., but she should get... Let her get married afterwards, after she gets a degree. But let us get her engaged instead of sending her sing. I said, Swami, this thing is going to start in August or so, and here we were in April, and we didn't even know who was going to be the good. I said, no, you'll get this thing. And believe it or not, that's how the whole thing started. Our son-in-law Pankaj was a day came over. All of this got
he just
compressed.
Had everything in mind. And the same thing with Vidyu also, Vidyu Lata, my niece, because Dr. Mahesh Narayan is her ANA.
No, but the same with Pankaj. Swami, this was in May. Swami is in Kodikinal, usual. And Pankaj is working in the U.S. And we hadn't seen him for years, you know, about 5-6 years since we had seen Pankaj. And he said, how do we give a daughter to somebody whom we have not seen? And then I went and told Swami. Swami said, go and see him and come. So I was then having a job as a consultant in the U.S. to a firm. And it so happened that they called me up and they said, hey, Umesh, can you come over next week? Mm-hmm. He used to call me over for, you know, periodically. And they said, can you come over next week just after Swami told me that you go and see him. So I called them up, and usually their office is in Connecticut, which is on the East Coast. Hmm. And I would take just across Atlantic and go. I said, hey, look, I'm going to be a little delayed because I'm going to go via the Pacific. He said, why? Are you crazy? Why do you want to take that long route? I said, no, I'll tell you when I get there. So I went to California where he was, met with Pankaj, and had a lunch with him and all that, and loved him and, you know, all that. And then I went to my work. Then I came back and reported to Swami. You say I checked him out? He's all right?
Due diligence by the father of the bride.
Yes.
Very important.
Was it done? All of that he followed up, you know.
And you said something about Vidyulata.
Yes. Actually, for Vidyulata, Narendra Mama had a mild stroke. And it definitely was an extension of life by Swami for Narendra Mama, because even before he was 60, this had happened. And that's when Mahesh, who's Vidyu's husband, he's an ENT surgeon, I think they had a mutual friend who had asked him to just go deliver a parcel to Professor Narendra at Brindavan. And that's how Mama met the boy. And definitely we thought it was such a good thing for Vidyu. And Swami just made it all happen. And it looked as if he just wanted Mama to complete that responsibility, because immediately after the marriage, just within a year's time, I think,
Mama, it was in 89, I think, they got married in 90, he passed
away. So an extension of life, and she's very happily settled in the UK, and both husband and wife are doing such excellent work.
And Dr. Narayanan comes here, yes, and he serves in our hospital.
Twice a year, he serves at the hospital, and he's very happy to call himself Professor Narendra's son-in-law. But most importantly, Vidhi also has offered a lot. They do a lot for the Balvikas movement and for the organization.
Yeah, 1990 he passed away.
So it's really wonderful to be associated with Swami's work.
Because your worldly responsibilities really get taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a recurring theme I hear from people who have dedicated their lives to Swami. Through the ups and downs, he just softens all the blows, and what could be a very big deal for a regular family make it seem so simple for those who entrust everything to him.
And sometimes, you know, it's amazing what the relationship between Swami and devotees are. And it's a connect, I think, maybe spread over many lives probably. Because with Narendra, he had this kind of a connect. And even to the end, you know, we talked about his passing away. And when he passed away in 1990 in Vrindavan, and again Swami wanted his cremation to happen over here. And we brought his body over here, and of course, it was a very tragic thing because it was an untimely passing away, and especially for the parents, his parents and my parents, chatting because they had seen their first grandchild pass away, and then to lose a son who was still just about 60. And so they came, and we all came here. Vidhi was in Chennai, not in Bangalore. And then the son, Bharat, he had gone on a trip to Delhi or someplace and connected with work. And then when we came over here and then performed, and we took the body for the cremation to Chitravati, you know, the question then came up about lighting the funeral pyre, which has to be done usually by the son.
And there were no cell phones during those days.
We couldn't find when exactly locate Bharat as to when he was going to come, but he had sent a message, I'll try to be there on that day. I'll try my best on how to get over there. But then the thing had to be done over here. Everything was ready, right? And we, at that time, the only next person would have been his first cousin, that is his father's brother's son. So he was there, but somehow my sister wasn't very happy with that. Because, you know, she said, I really wish Bharat had been here. I don't want, you know, somebody else.
Or she wanted my husband to perform it.
But that was not right, you know, because I was not in the right relationship to do that. So she, when this was happening, suddenly a gust of wind from nowhere, it was a perfectly still day, a gust of wind came. And you know that fire, this thing you take around and then you go
the
and then
pot, of fire,
pot and then you... That thing blew and the whole thing caught fire
on its own spontaneously.
After that, that evening Bharat came over here, but nobody had to light the fire at all. It caught.
It just lit on its own.
When this was happening, Swami was just in the... In his interview room.
He just came out of the interview room.
And there Sanjay Sahni and a couple of others were sitting in the veranda in front. And he tells them, tells Sanjay, that see, I have taken care of
my Narendra.
Sanjay Sahni was telling this to me.
Because we were not aware that Swami had said that to
him. Said that to him.
So he basically lit the fire himself.
Well, yeah.
In the form of a gust of wind.
He took care of him.
You know, this has been our experience of his omnipresence, omniscience.
Omnipotent.
I mean, various incidents, and I mean, this is just one very important thing where we have Mr. Sanjay Sahani telling us what Swami mentioned. You know, so when one is dedicated, Swami just takes over our complete, I mean, even to the extent of doing that for us.
Who was Justice Damodar Rao?
Narendra Mama's father.
So, your sister's father-in-law?
Yes, actually, and also my mother's brother.
Okay.
And my father's cousin.
Wow, you just very confusing.
Very confusing.
Because he was a judge of the Madras High Court.
Yeah.
And he played a role in drafting the bylaws and
early years. That's what I'm saying. They're all involved in that. He was there for Chennai and
for Abbotsbury.
And in Bangalore, it was that core group which included Naganan's father, Sundar Swami. You know, he was one of the legal listing, and another gentleman joined later, K.R. Prasad, who was the income tax. They were all there, people who were involved at that time, you see. So all of these people, like I said, the roots Swami was as lead for the whole thing is very, very strong.
I mean, he handpicked the first group of...
Very dedicated, committed, very professional people and with very sound values.
And that's that chapter, like many others in the Sai story, that we are very silent about. Because everybody who contributed did it as an act of selfless service.
Yes.
And there is no pomp or show about it. No. But I think it's only our duty to history to record that.
Yes.
So that we are aware of where are the strong roots that this organization sure. has, where did they come from, and when
yes.
were they planted.
Yes.
Actually, he was the state president of Chennai around the same period when my father-in-law was the state president of Karnataka. So Swami used to have a lot of interaction with all of them, guiding them which way to go and what to do. And so the personal interaction was intense during that period mm-hmm. because he was laying the foundation for the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization. And he didn't want anything going wrong.
Swami is very particular about following the laws of the land.
Yes, yes, the
absolutely.
Laws of the land.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
No way. And I think he really selected people, Mr. Iradi for Kerala.
Justice Iradi for Kerala. People yeah. with sterling reputation,
yes.
clean
yes.
public record,
yes.
personal lives.
Yes.
Who are well
and
recognized.
Also very, very well, you know, for respected. Instance, if you take a person like Dr. Gokak.
Yes.
Yeah, he was really...
he was the first vice chancellor
yes.
of our university.
Yes.
As students, we were in awe. Of every word he spoke.
And do you remember his English?
My
it was
God.
So pristine.
It was such a pleasure on the ears, and it just made you wonder what's wrong with me. Why can't I express myself half as eloquently? And you know, his thought was so high, a big Aurobindo,
yes.
exponent of Sri Aurobindo Ghosh's philosophy, my God. And the way he put Swami's mission in the wider perspective, it made you feel I'm part of something so special and important.
Yes. He had a high...
Visionary.
Yeah, he was.
He had a very high regard for Narendra, and both of them used to, because Narendra was also...
English Department,
Presidency College and all that. That's why, matter of fact, I brought this article for you in case you have not seen it, from that Smriti for you to keep.
And the article is The Will, the Word and the World by Professor D. Narendra.
Just read that when you get a chance.
I will, and I would like to, for the sake of our listeners, just quote a few lines
mm-hmm.
From this, where he says, and I quote him, "A distinguished former commander-in-chief of the Indian Army, a regular visitor to Vrindavan, used to carry in his pocket printed bookmarks carrying the sayings of Bhagwan and distribute them to all the devotees. Tall, erect, carrying his 70 and odd years with great dignity, the general radiated energy, composure and cheer. He passionately believed in the sayings of Bhagwan and wanted to share the joy they gave him. Bhagwan's word is literally the gospel, God's word. They're packed with dynamic wisdom. They release a force in our minds and that revitalizes the thought processes and gives new direction to our lives. Jesus said, 'If you abide in me and my words abide in you, you shall ask what you will and it shall be done unto you.' This is the proof of the divine word." And then he goes on to say that the word or logos in Greek and Hebrew metaphysics is the link between God and man. The Old Testament prophets believed in that wisdom of God activated all life, all consciousness through the power of the declared word. Unquote. So sublime and so uplifting, my God.
You know, Professor Gokak, you know, had influenced Narendra quite a bit. And you can see that from the style of his writing. And today we really need more of such writers to come up to write about
Swami.
This is
the age of WhatsApp, where every message is an atomic little expression of
yes,
a thumbs up
absolutely.
Or a namaste or a smiley face. People have practically forgotten the art of clear, authentic communication.
Writing.
Which can uplift your spirit
yes.
and, you know, inspire you. A smiley cannot have that effect on a WhatsApp message.
Absolutely right.
You know, when you look back and say, how have we become counselors? If you analyze all of those incidents, the learning that happened over a period of years.
You were being tutored.
We were being tutored on what body language means. What is humility? What is egolessness?
Actually, I think the period from 1963 to 1974 was really one of intense learning for us.
Right through to
85. Especially when Vijay Sai was there and the number of interactions which we've had as a family with Swami. Every bit of it, every bit of the way. I think the future was also there in Swami's mind, which we failed to perceive, being humans. And Vijay Sai had 11 years of continued protection from Swami. I think I became an active caregiver after I got married into the family, though he was my cousin even before marriage. But from 1970 onward, I felt that I could see in him an inner strength, despite the body being so weak. I think that was a great learning experience, that if you have that connect with your spirituality and your spiritual being, no matter what, you can remain in a state of happiness and bliss. And I think that we have definitely integrated as a doable thing for our patients at Baba's hospital. Just triggering and igniting that which is already there present within. I think that's one of the things which Swami wanted us to learn through these experiences.
But Swami, I think, was very keen that he should set us on this path. We didn't know his master plan at that point. And now when we started looking back onto the things that he put into place with us, which became ultimately relevant to our counseling thing, in 84, it was, you know, way back before the counseling program started in 2001, we're talking about 15 years back or 16 years back. I used to go to the U.S., fairly frequently on work, and on every time I used to go take Swami's blessings. On one such trip that I was going, Father and I, we just took Swami's leave here in Prashanthi Nilayam, and then he blessed me, gave me vibhuti packets, and just when I finished taking Pad Namaskar, he looked at me for just, you know, maybe about 5-10 seconds intently, and suddenly materialized a little idol of Saraswati, a silver idol of Saraswati, which I still carry always in my purse. And he said, "Idi petko."
Keep it on.
Keep it with
you. Keep it with you always. It'll be for your good.
The goddess of learning.
Goddess of learning. You see, so the goddess of learning he handed me in 1984, and I thought, well, in a certain sense it was with my profession, because we were entering into a new line of acoustics, which we had not done before. But then gradually, when the counseling program started, I understood how much that Saraswati meant in your life, because it triggered so much more of learning that you had to go through to learn a new subject, because Swami had wanted us to do this.
You were an engineer, and you had economics background.
Yeah.
You've done Balvikas in landscaping and aesthetics. And so how did this shift happen? I understand that even before the hospital began in Whitefield, Swami got you already involved in the process of handling patients.
Yes. What happened was in 2000, in December, the activity was so hectic around the Whitefield Hospital. Swami's visit used to be in the morning and evening, making sure that the... You know,
because it was inaugurated in
January 2001. So, I mean, I used to just do odd jobs around the place. Whatever, wherever there was a need, I was just able to fill in. If I was in a position to fill in the need, I offered my service. But suddenly one day, Swami looked at me and he said, "How are my patients?" And I was quite amazed, because I wasn't interacting with the patients at that point at all.
There were no patients.
They were. They had already started coming in registration.
Okay.
Then I knew that Swami, he doesn't speak even a single word without it having a definite purpose. So he said, "Take care of my patients." So the next day when I went, I realized that there was a need, a genuine need, for these people who had come from all over India to just have the presence of somebody to whom they could connect with in their own language. And they just wanted to unburden themselves. They just wanted an active listener.
And a multilingual one. So that
yes.
helped you.
I think that's where I realized, oh my God, I think I'm able to understand every word which this lady speaks. So she's from West Bengal. And when I started responding, I think it's a language of love which just flowed. And having had a neighbor, Mr. Sunanda Ghosh, who was a Bengali, I had picked up quite a bit of Bengali. So I just recognized that I could speak to the Bengali patient, I could speak to the Telugu patient, a Tamil patient, a Malayalam patient, and, you know, in Hindi. And I realized maybe that's the reason why Swami wanted me to start interacting with the patient. And that's where it ended. I didn't realize about this counseling department which he was wanting to happen, but it's already there in the master plan. But I enjoy doing what I did. I felt there was definitely a deep connect, a rapport between somebody whom I didn't know, and they felt that they had been hurt and they were able to unburden. So that was the beginning. But by the time the hospital got inaugurated in 2001, Swami had also blessed Umesh, saying, "You go and take care of the patients as well." And he was a full-time engineer working in our own firm by then, but he did want to get involved. But I guess he, having been a patient himself, and the first department which was opened there was the cardiac. We didn't have the neuro started at that point. So when Swami blessed us, saying the two of you take care of the patients, and in public when we were just sitting for darshan, in front of the doctors and all the medical people, Swami looked at me and he said, how are our patients? You know, that was a big difference, because from the term my patients, when they became our patients, I thought, well, I think I am doing something right here. Mm. And I knew that Swami had a definite plan in mind. And from then onwards, he's held our hand, giving both of us directions which way to go and how to fill in the needs. So I would leave the house at 7:30 in the morning. And during those days, the Whitefield Road wasn't as bad as it is now. Reach the hospital on time and visit every patient at bedside. The pre-operative as well as the post-operative. And I realized I could connect with every patient. And all that I did was I would listen to them, pray for them, think of Swami, and his energy would just flow from patient to patient. I mean, that was the beginning. But realized that these patients were being discharged. And we were equipped with some amount of clinical experience because having had patients at home. But then we started studying like we were real students and started getting books and reading as to what exactly do we need to tell the patient who's getting discharged. And fortunately, the physiotherapist as well as the dietitians were of immense support to us. I mean, they all knew us. So I guess Swami's choice of the individual whom he sent to take care of this was very helpful, because people started giving us information as well. And we started doing the discharges of these patients. We didn't have a table, we didn't have chairs. First thing we put in our department was a picture in a little space which Dr. Sapphire had given us. So we just put Swami's picture there, and then we just had a few chairs. So we started seeing people at bedside and people on the day of discharge. And then Usha Punja joined our group. Swami blessed her as well. And she joined us in the month of March. So we were three counselors. He would come once or twice a week, but I would go there every day. And Ushaka and I would go there 5 days a week. So our work started expanding. And all the departments at that point, they were all trying to settle down. So the dietary as well as physiotherapists were quite relieved that we're helping them out. And we wouldn't do anything which was not in line with whatever it is that they wanted to communicate, because both Ushaka and I and Umesh could interact with the patients in the language of the patient's choice. So that came in very, very helpful. But gradually, Ramani Surya Narayana was our fourth counselor who joined us. She is Sri Gopal Rao's, Garu's daughter-in-law. So the four of us, very old devotees, blessed by Swami, formed the first team of counselors.
And what evolved out of it was counseling the SaiWay program.
Yes.
Which has now grown to include a large number of volunteers.
Yes.
I believe a total of 36 counselors.
Yes.
So what started as a three-member team and then became four is now in 30s.
Yes. For the first 6 years, we were just four of us, not more than four. That was the period when we were laying the foundation for the entire program. And Dr. Sapphire was good enough as a director to give us guidance. He said, think of this as a complementary line. Do not use alternative methods here. So he said, refrain from the term yoga. Refrain from the term Reiki and anything doing with pranayama, mainly because people from different religious backgrounds would be our patients. And he was wanting us to be very sensitive to these terminologies being used. And we definitely did not practice any of these.
I understand you used the person-centric psychotherapy of Carl Rogers as the academic model.
Absolutely. And actually, initially, when we knew that, you know, Swami wanted something to happen in this department by our team, the three of us ladies signed up to work for a course in counseling at a place called Parivartan, which is in Bangalore. And we did the course. We completed that course. But what came out of it was, yes, we received the structure of what counseling involves. But I think we wanted to get in a little deeper into the spiritual aspect, which is what Swami, I think, wanted us to do, fostering the innate spirituality in the patient to help them heal. And that's when we coined the term Sai counseling. Sai standing for spirituality, awareness, integration in every individual, which is innately present. Of course, we have had people who do not believe in a God per se, but they do believe in something which lends meaning to their lives. So we would actually help them rekindle that, connect to that. For some, it would be just the father or their mother and work itself per se. So studying the human side of every individual patient also became part of our work.
Mm-hmm. And you even professionally managed to benchmark it quite well globally.
Yes. We did a lot of self-study, Karunaji. Yes, we studied on our own and courses, books, whatever we could get. Because our main aim and goal was, this was all for Swami. So we wanted to offer only the best.
It's an interesting, we did it in two ways. One was, of course, what Geeta was mentioning. She was directly involved with the patients and so on. I used to be involved once a week. But I think when Swami gave me this chance of the Saraswati and wanting, and being an engineer and that too, you know, when you have an IISc DNA in you, your tendency is more towards researching and looking more into asking yourself, if there is no precedent for something, does it mean it cannot happen? And certainly with Swami behind you, it should. So because spirituality-based counseling, we couldn't find any given course or any such thing at that point of time. So we said, so much Swami has said that the 50% of healing or curing is with the doctor, but 50% is through God's grace. So if this is 50%, then this enabling has also got to be a tool that needs to be leveraged in any hospital. And then when we started doing this research, we started with the very first principle in medicine. What is the benchmark in medicine? When you look at the WHO definition of health,
It's very holistic,
isn't it?
It includes the spiritual aspect.
Yes. Now, but that somewhere along the line has gotten lost.
It just stays in the definition.
So we said, this is what Swami wants us in the, you know. And then we connected with the fact that the Whitefield Hospital is always being referred to as a temple of healing. Healing has got to have a spiritual dimension. Curing plus the spiritual dimension gives you total healing. So when we started with that, we said, let's now put together a program that would really be something that would be a robust program that could stand up to any peer review.
And I believe you presented papers at some very internationally reputed institutions.
Actually, in 2003, we visited Dr. Dean Ornish's center
in the US.
Yes, because he had done a tremendous amount of research in reversing coronary arterial disease. So we definitely wanted to meet him. And it was such a humbling experience that he did meet with us. It was such an honor to meet him.
And what was his reaction to the place you were coming from?
This is the point. See, it was a very funny thing. You know, all those visits that we did, starting with Dean Ornish and on, and, you know,
Karolinska Institute in Sweden, the Mayo Clinic,
UCSF in California.
And Stanford.
All of this, it was purely, I would tell Swami, Swami, I want, and he would give me his blessings. And there were no other intermediaries. We didn't use the organization there or here or anybody else to give us a reference. We would simply correspond and get in touch with the heads over there. And when we mentioned we are coming from Sai Baba's hospital, immediately, you know, the doors would just open.
And were they aware of Swami?
They were aware of Swami.
Some,
I mean, in a kind of a general way, but not, they heard of the good work that is being done. Because by that time, in 2003, 2004, the Puttaparthi Super Specialty Hospital was already up and running very well.
Yes, over 10 years. So it had already.
And the water project. So Swami's
work
humanitarian
was well-known.
Mission was already in.
But I think in certain places it was, we introduced the subject of the wonderful work which was being done, made presentations as well as where we came from and what our intent was. And I think that they appreciated tremendously. And whatever it is that we could share with them, because we were just 3 years old then when we went to Dean Ornish, and then later on, of course, kind of started.
Dean Ornish, if you remember, when we asked for an appointment after we went there with the secretary, she said he's leaving for China tonight, but he has said that he can spare about 15 minutes to maybe 20 minutes for you because he likes to meet you and know what you're doing. We said, fine, that's good, we'll get in. So when we went there, it had ended up that he spent more like 65 minutes or 70 minutes with us. So that was the kind of, when he started asking more questions about Swami.
Level of engagement, the topic is that you cannot have a cursory discussion on it.
Yes. And I think Swami provided us the right books at the right time as well.
Yes.
Because Apriya Sood, who's one of Swami's devotees, she'd done a course in counseling in UK. And she gave us the person-centered counseling book. And we kind of read through the entire textbook and we realized, well, we are on the right path because that is a person-centered. You were asking me about Carl Rogers. Like Carl Rogers, I just want to share a quote. He says, individuals have within themselves vast resources. for self-understanding and for altering their self-concepts, basic attitudes, and self-directed behavior. These resources can be tapped if a definable climate of facilitative psychological attitudes can be provided. There are three conditions that must be present in order for a climate to be growth promoting, and those three conditions is what Swami has been teaching us throughout. He says unconditional positive regard, which is love, congruence in the therapist, so that you're following the path of Dharma and you're clear.
Three conditions.
That is unity in thought, word, indeed.
And most importantly, empathy, to put yourself in the place.
Let me ask you something. You're constantly dealing with people as counselors who are in very unhappy situations of pain and distress and stress. Does it not get to you?
Yes, it does for the time that we are engaged in it, for sure. But this is where the counselor training comes in. And you know, the way we have got our counselors, the training program is really purely based upon Swami's teachings, as well as Swami himself. How Swami used to conduct himself, and based upon basically the five values.
Apart from that, I just wish to add, it will get to you if you think you are the doer. Which we don't. We train the counselors to let Swami do the work.
I see.
Or, I mean, now we have counselors who are not even Sai devotees, but who are very good spiritual minded people coming from various other, parts of belief system. So they just connect to their source. So when you connect to your source and when you communicate, I feel it's a different energy which flows. It's not coming from the ego. So the moment you decide that, well,
instrument.
I'm the one, you're just an instrument. So then it doesn't get to us.
And then when you look at the concept of the values themselves, and you look at the concept of Shanti, Shanti is, as Swami has, very nicely pointed, it's not only the equanimity of the mind or peace, but it also has a certain sense of detachment. You have to be able to stand back and be able to look. And out of that, you get a certain equanimity within you. You see, this is very important in terms of when our counselors, that they don't get involved emotionally with the patient. Because then we end up having two patients on our hands.
You're right.
No, actually, when the new volunteers come in and it's their first day of counseling and they're supervised by one of our counselors, they do share with us, saying, oh, I was terribly nervous. The nervousness starts coming in only when you feel that, well, I must do things right. When the eye disappears and you're just saying, okay, Swami, just lead me, then they are a lot more relaxed. So we use this term, what is called clearing space, to bring about congruence in the counselor. Clearing space is nothing else but when you move from one patient to the other, you don't carry the first patient on to your second.
Just be in that moment.
In that moment.
For that duration of time.
That is
so not the past, not the future, just the present moment. And that in itself is so energizing for every counselor. Because you'll see all our counselors coming in with a bright smile, hugging each other in the morning before we start work, praying to Swami. At the end of the day, we're all with the same bright smile, saying goodbye to each other and leaving. So that's
must have been a huge growth spurt for the both of you.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
See, this concept of what she just said about clearing space. Again, you know, I've always been looking at Swami's parallels on how he brought in all of this concept by example. I always tell the counselor or counselors in training, when you see Swami, he sees thousands of people during darshan.
And each one with a different
petition.
And
each one, when he engages with them for those brief moments, it's nobody else exists. Nobody else exists.
It's just you and him.
One on one. And Swami is totally focused, you're focused. But the minute he moves on to the next, this person is switched off.
Yeah. And the same with interviews as well.
Yeah.
You're the closest of kin inside the interview room. Swami knows everything about you and the bond is so strong. The moment the interview is over and he gives you your prasadam and you're on the way out,
the next minute,
a stranger to him and, the connect disappears. So, I mean,
that's a huge learning lesson for a counselor, how
so this
to
is where
shift
applied
from one
his
patient to the other patient and maintain that equanimity towards addressing each patient.
So when he says his life is his message, these are, however insignificant it might seem, I think it kind of adds so much of value when you apply it.
And then in his writings are amazing also. You see, one of the textbooks that we have prescribed for our counselors in the part of the training process is really a very slim book called Mind and Its Mysteries. And it's a collection of 9 lectures that Swami gave during the Navaratri period in 1976. And this book is compiled by Kasturi Garu.
I see. I also notice you have a book called Counseling the Sai Way, which has been published by Springer.
Yes.
A chapter in that. It's a handbook on psychotherapy.
And you have contributed a chapter.
Yeah, chapter. We were invited to
come. And the amount of learning and self-education that you've done is clearly very impressive. Geeta, you've been through the workshop on existential well-being.
Yeah.
Conducted by Mia Leeson in Belgium, and followed it up by completing a one-year online course on counseling for existential well-being.
Yes.
Now, that requires a lot of motivation, and by this time you had grown-up children and you were, I guess, well into your 50s?
Oh, yes. I'm 67 now. And I think that's all the more reason why I had my freedom to study.
I see.
And most importantly, I think at every point we really wanted to benchmark ourselves, Karunaji. You know, we wanted to give our best to the department. And meeting with Mia was in itself quite a miracle, because in 2008, Umesh and I had gone to UK, to Norway, to make our presentation.
University of East Anglia.
International Conference. Which is the hub of person-centered counseling. And so we met with a whole lot of academicians there, and Mia had come to give her keynote address. So we didn't know her, and she was a very well-respected psychologist, headed the Department of Psychology at the University of Leuven. And she had planned on leaving the same day as soon as she delivered her lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a huge gathering from all over the world. But she said something made her change her mind when she read our heading, saying Counseling the Sai Way.
Mm-hmm.
So she cancelled her tickets back to Belgium, stayed on to sit in on our
session.
And that's all. I mean, she didn't kind of say anything more. But after she heard our lecture, and I presented a couple of case studies, and Umesh did his presentation as well, the next day at breakfast, she said, "Why don't you come share my table?" And we did. And that's when she said, "Well, I have been to India, and I have seen Sai Baba."
Wow.
And her husband, Luke, has written beautiful 2 books on Christ and Swami.
Mm-hmm.
And they are great scholars, both of them. And she kind of described about her trip to India. We never thought that in that ocean, we would find a Sai devotee. And she was very, very impressed with all the wonderful work Swami was doing. And we kept in touch with each other. And when we had a spirituality international
first conference
at our hospital in Whitefield, Dr. A.S. Hegde was the director then. We invited her to give the keynote address. So she and her husband, Luke, had come, and Swami blessed them both here at Prashanthi Nilayam, and she did a marvelous job. By then, we had added on 10 more counselors to the department, because in 2006 is when we got the first batch of volunteers for training. And they all went through a one-week course with Mia conducting the course on person-centered counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't this Swami's miracle? So they kind of got an overview of which way to go, and it really tailored our program. So we gave up physiotherapy, we gave up dietary counseling, because by then the departments were very well established, and our focus was totally on the psychology of every patient, the emotion, the feelings.
And this is a very typical theme in Swami's mission, that an economist and an engineer are counseling people with such great amount of success, as he handpicked some of the ex-students from his own university to learn how to operate the MRI and CT scan machines.
Absolutely.
With no background in any of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But when he picks an instrument, if you're available, I will make you capable.
Yes, absolutely.
So availability is, I think, the key qualifying criteria in this case. And if you can just very briefly tell us about the Sai Cardiac Rehabilitation Program that has also now set in as part of what you do at the Whitefield Hospital.
The Cardiac Rehab Program really got started in 2005. What happened there was, since I had gone through this patient experience of having gone through a MVR operation, and the aftermath of that. And since our hospital were performing a lot of valve replacement and valve surgeries,
mm-hmm.
that kind of triggered my interest into seeing. I could understand and empathize as to what were the aftercare needs after the surgery is done for you to lead a healthy life and a normal life. And so I was talking to Dr. Safaya that when these patients, the operation is successful, but that's not the end. You've got to have a follow-through to make sure that they are, you know, taking care of themselves. And even Swami had told, you know, in some of his interactions with him, that, you know, these patients, the operation is very successful, but Swami's care should be care for life. we should be able to provide them the necessary knowledge and the tools that they're able to lead a normal life and be of use to society and to their families. So when we started the rehab program, what Dr. Safaya said was, why don't we find, how do we go about this in a manner that is practical and can be used, you know, at grassroots levels? Because the patient category was coming from, as you know, distributed rural settings and so on. So we said the first thing we need to do is we've got to join hands with the Seva organization, because Swami has so beautifully set up the Seva organization, which has got its presence virtually in every corner in India.
Absolutely.
Isn't that right? So when you have such a powerful organization, probably the largest in the world, we wanted to, and they were already doing medical service. Now, the first thing I think that they had started was to see if they could send these patients to the medical camps. But that was not really the answer for the tertiary level patients that we were seeing. So Dr. Safa and I said, let's do it the other way around. Let's tap these doctors who come for the medical service side devotees and then send the patient to the doctor's clinic, to the nearest doctor's clinic from their homes. And if the doctor is seeing, say, 10 patients a day, the 11th patient would be a patient from our hospital, mm-hmm. whom he would see free. And that worked out very well, because for the doctors, it was, you know, they really welcomed it, because they thought it was like Swami sending the patient to mm-hmm. their clinic. And
so how did you identify these doctors? With the help of the Seva organization. Sai doctors mostly.
Sai doctors, yes. So like for instance in Karnataka we had about say 30 districts.
Yeah.
And we had about 3 doctors for each district.
I see.
And so there were about 105 doctors who volunteered.
We had a list of those doctors.
And so we conducted a training course for them with our doctors, with Dr. Dash and others training, you know, training them. And then they were given, you know, as soon as a patient gets discharged, a form would be sent to them, to along with the patient, to go and report to this particular doctor.
That's an amazing follow-up. I know in West Bengal and Orissa we have the telemedicine to
yes.
follow up, but in all other states to also have the single point
yes.
of contact
yes.
of a medical profession.
Yes.
This is amazing follow-up.
Yes.
I cannot imagine any other healthcare system which completes the circle.
Absolutely.
Yes. In delivering healthcare to the patient.
Yes.
In fact, just the day before yesterday, we received a message from Shravan Kumar, an ex-student of Swami's, who's a manager now, who handles this from our hospital, that they've started now a branch in West Bengal and Orissa, apart from Andhra Pradesh, Kerala and Tamil Nadu. Mm-hmm. And Karnataka, of course. Karnataka was the first pilot model, mm-hmm. and now just catching up.
A very important factor in that was also a doctor, when he prescribes medication today, wherever he is so dependent upon the diagnostics, either it's a lab report or, you know, even just a simple blood test and so on. So the results have to be authentic. So when you send a patient out into the smaller towns, you don't know the quality of the lab. And if you're prescribing follow-up medication based on that, it could be not giving you the necessary or the desired results. Sometimes it could be dangerous. So what this rehab program does is, the doctor over there, who's a local doctor, knows which are the labs
yes,
in that area.
Which can be depended upon.
Dependent
yeah.
upon. And so he identifies the lab for the patient.
Hmm. Now, if I may just fast forward, 48 years of your life, you were so immersed in Swami and his teachings and his mission, hands-on, total surrender. You've had so many learning experiences. When he left the body, was it hard for you?
Absolutely.
I think
it was
essential.
Initially, it always
definitely.
Is. For all of us, it was. I think all of us, you know, for the first,
the entire family. And it did take time for us to be able to feel his divine presence deep within us, because we as a family were so used to coming to Puttaparthi,
yes, and
to
talking
Vrindavan,
and checking
and
things out.
Checking things out with him at every point. So we just did a lot of self-meditation and just to feel his presence. And sometimes, believe me, coming to a place which was so full of memories of Swami in his physical form in itself was such a painful experience. Because, you know, the moment we would come, we would start thinking about the past connection at a particular place, at a particular moment. So we decided just staying together and praying together would be one definite way of overcoming. And I would just go for silent meditations to try and see how well I could connect. It took time. It took some time. But right now, I think, I mean, we always knew God is everywhere. Now we have learned how to see Him deep within ourselves.
You know, Swami in his own way of helping us, things happened in our counseling department itself, which showed the signs of his presence to us and that he is still with us and around us. See, one of the things that happened in 2012, which was a year following Mahasamadhi, was we never had a separate department for ourselves, the counseling department. We had an area that had been allocated with some screens and, you know, makeshift arrangement, which was the way we had been functioning. But we had always wanted a little more of a privacy. And also we wanted to have a place where patients could sit silently. See, even though the hospital, you know, the dome area is so beautiful, it is still a
public area,
high traffic area, yeah, where there is noise. And we wanted...
And movement. Yes.
Movement. So we wanted something that was a little more... And this had been our... you know, we had been praying to Swami for a long time.
Right.
So on July 5th, 2012, yeah, Dr. Swarna Bharadwaj was the then director.
Yes.
So we had this beautiful space inaugurated where we have...
And which happened because of some, you know, Swami enabled that to happen.
And we knew that Swami wanted it this way. And I mean, though physically he was not there, he was constantly blessing and guiding us at every step of the way.
In the same area, but we
enclosed it completely.
We put up a new structure there.
And acoustically.
And then acoustically treated a small space where Swami had come and visited. And that became the healing space, which everybody today goes and the patients are taken in there for us when they want to pray. And everybody feels Swami's energy in it.
And over the past years, 2012 to 2017, people who have visited the place in 2012 and when they come now, they feel that the energy is so filled with peace because of the numerous patients also who have prayed right from their heart. Because we just have Swami's chair there and a picture from every different religion and a number of chairs. We take all the patients, whether they come from the stream of pre-admission, whom we counsel, or on the day of admission, or on the day of discharge. Only the transfer-in patients who have been operated upon, are seen at bedside. So this is what takes place here. And we also have a patient profile for every single patient. And the four stages of counseling, the psychological, social, physical, as well as the spiritual record is maintained for every patient. And this profile is part of the patient's file.
I guess we should all go to that sacred spot next time we are visiting. We all need some healing at some level.
Actually, when an inpatient is in ICU, I personally go there to meet the patient. We get a call, and if he's in ICU and the doctor gives the clean chit for him to be brought downstairs, see, the space is just a quiet space for silent introspection and contemplation. Yes, the space does heal the person. A number of them have been healed because I think there is some energy, the divine energy, because of the amount of prayers which has happened there, sincere prayers.
And selfless for a complete stranger.
Absolutely. And we start the day with prayers and the morning batch of patients join us in our prayers. And because most of them are Bengalis, we also play a Bengali bhajan for them. And they all join in the bhajan because that's
can relate to it.
And relate to it. And that's how they connect. So how do we foster this is the main thing.
You know, Swami blessed a very beautiful program in the sense it's called as a body relaxation, mind cleansing and healing process. It's a small meditation thing which we teach the patients as they go through.
Like a visualization?
Oh, it's like a visualization.
Mostly dependent on the breath. You know, it's just the diaphragmic breathing, which is taught to every patient. And that is the coping mechanism they carry with them, whichever stage of, you know, healing and journey they are in, you know, in their surgery.
So the cleansing process, they can practice this. We tell them and the caregivers to continuously do this while they are in the ICU or wherever it is. Because we tell the patients during counseling, you know, you see, you come in here, you're worried about whether your operation is going to happen, is it going to be painful. I said, forget all that, the doctors and the nurses, that's their responsibility. But we have got a very important job for you, which only you can do. And then they're wondering, what is it that we can do to in this? And we said, we want you to pray and to connect. And we have taught you this little process of relaxation. So you practice that as much as you can.
Actually, medically, Dr. Herbert Benson has proven through his research that it's called the relaxation response. And so it's accepted in the medical field. So we can't introduce anything which is not acceptable to the medical field. And this is nothing else but yoga nidra.
But we don't use the word yoga.
The deep breathing and the relaxation and the 16 points in the physical body asking them to, you know, remove
stress. Basically, your chakras, you're relaxing.
And then you start breathing and then your mind is at a level where it is not filled with thoughts.
Mm. Like an alpha.
Yes. State. And then you get into the affirmation, positive affirmation, giving up negative emotions and develop your connect with the God of your choice. And that's always been the foundation of the counseling department, the God of the patient's choice. And it really does work. And we've taught the same to the nursing college students as well. And they did a recent research program where they have proven that, yes, it definitely helps the students when they de-stress themselves. They're able to then connect better and foster their spiritual energy.
This sounds like incredible amount of dedication and motivation and commitment. But I have a question for you, Mr. Rao. And the question is that I notice in your resume, you are the chairman and the managing director of Lotus Energy System, which was founded in 77 with Swami's blessings.
Yes.
It's an engineering company, and I went to the website and I checked. You are mostly into clean energies and alternate energies. Mm-hmm. Now, I also noticed this, which looks like a little bit of a dissonance, and I hope you don't mind my asking this. As of 10th of July 2013, one of your directors is a person who has been found to impersonate Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai Baba after his departure from the physical body.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai.
Jai Harati, Mangal Harati, Mutya Harati. Murli Manohar Mohan Giridhar 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 మెచ్చుకొనడు మాజాయి హృదయ కమలము అర్పి Baba, I don't need.